access to the Pantheon. No way to call the power.
Last chance to turn back, said Alton.
She scoffed, handed him a torch, and strode forward. Rin had barely made it 10 feet in when she took one step too wide. The dark passageway turned out to be perilously narrow. She felt something crumble under her foot and scrambled back against the wall. She held her torch out over the precipice and was immediately overcome with a horrible sense of vertigo. There was no visible bottom to the abyss. It dropped away into nothing.
It's hollow all the way down, said Alton, standing close behind her.
He put a hand on her shoulder.
Stick to me. Watch your feet. Chagan said we'd reach a wider platform in about 20 paces.
She pressed herself against the cliff wall and let Alton squeeze past her, following him gingerly down the steps.
What else did Chagan say?
That we would find this.
Alton held out his torch. A lone pulley lift hung in the middle of the mountain. Rin held her torch out as far as it would go, and the light illuminated something black and shiny on the platform's surface. That's oil. This is a lamp, Rin realized. She drew her arm back.
Careful,
Alton hissed just as Rin flung her torch out onto the lift. The ancient oil blazed immediately to life. Fire snaked through the darkness across predetermined oil patterns in a hypnotizing sequence, revealing several similar pulley lamps hanging at various heights. Only after several long minutes was the entire mountain illuminated, revealing an intricate architecture to the stone prison. Below the passageway where they stood, Rin could see circles upon circles of plinths, extending down as far as the light reached. Around and around the inside of the mountain went a spiraling pathway that led to countless stone tombs. The pattern was oddly familiar. Rin had seen this before. It was a stone version of the Pantheon, in miniature, multiplied in a spiraling helix. It was a perverse Pantheon, for the gods were not alive here but arrested in suspended animation. Rin felt a sudden burst of panic. She took a deep breath, trying to dispel the feeling, but the overwhelming sense of suffocation only grew.
I feel it too, Alton said quietly. It's the mountain. We've been sealed off.
Back in Takani, Rin had once fallen out of a tree and hit her head so hard against the ground that she lost her hearing temporarily. She'd seen Kasegi shouting at her, gesturing at his throat, but nothing had come through. It was the same here. Something was missing. She had been denied access to something. She could not imagine what it was like to be trapped here for years, decades upon decades, unable to die but unable to leave the material world. This was a place that did not allow dreaming. This was a place of never-ending nightmares. What a horrible fate to be entombed here. Rin's fingers brushed against something round. Under the pressure of her touch, it shifted and began to turn. She shone her torch on it and signaled for Alton's attention. Look! It was a stone cylinder. Rin was reminded of the prayer wheels in front of the pagoda at the academy. But this cylinder was much larger, rising up to her shoulder. Rin held the torch up to the stone and examined it closely. Deep grooves had been cut into its sides. She placed a hand on one side and dug her heels into the dirt. Pushed hard. With a screech that sounded like a scream, the wheel began to turn. The grooves were words. No. Names. Names upon names, each one followed by a string of numbers. It was a record. A registry of every soul that had been sealed inside the Chulu Kurik. There must have been 100 names carved into that wheel. Alton held the torch up to her right.
It's not the only one.
She looked up and saw that the fire illuminated another record wheel. Then another. Then another. They stretched through the entire first tier of the stone mountain. thousands and thousands of names. Names dating past the reign of the Dragon Emperor. Names dating past the Red Emperor himself. Rin almost staggered at the significance. There were people here who had not been conscious since the birth of the Nikara Empire.
The investiture of the gods, said Alton.
He was trembling.
The sheer power in this mountain. No one could stop them. Not even the Federation.
And not even us, Rin thought. If they woke the Chulu Kurik, they would have an army of madmen, of primordial spigots of psychic energy. This was an army they would not be able to control. This was an army that could raise the world.
Rin traced her fingers against the first record wheel, the one closest to the entrance. At the top, in very careful, deliberate writing, was the most recent entry. She recognized that handwriting.
I found him, she said.
Who? The gatekeeper?
Alton looked confused.
It's him, she said. Of course it's him.
She ran her fingers over the engraved stone, and a deep flood of relief shot through her.
Jiang Ziya. She had found him. Finally found him. Her master was sealed inside one of these plinths. She grabbed the torch back from Alton and started at a run down the steps.
Whispers echoed past her as she ran. She thought she could sense things coming through from the other side, the things that had been whispering through the void Jiang summoned at Sinigard.
She felt in the air an overwhelming want.
They must have immured the shaman starting at the bottom of the prison. Jiang could not be far from where they stood. Rin ran faster, felt the stone scrape under her feet. Up before her, her torch illuminated a plinth carved in the image of a stooped gatekeeper. She came to a sudden halt.
This had to be Jiang.
Alton caught up to her.
Don't just take off like that.
He's here, she said, shining her torch up at the plinth. He's in there.
Move, said Alton.
She had barely stepped out of the way when Alton slammed the end of his trident into the plinth. When the rubble cleared, Jiang's serene form was revealed under a layer of crumbling dust. He lay perfectly still against the rock. The sides of his mouth curved faintly upward, as if he found something deeply amusing. He might have been sleeping. He opened his eyes, looked them up and down, and blinked.
You might have knocked first.
Rin stepped toward him.
Master?
Jiang tilted his head sideways.
Have you gotten taller?
We're here to rescue you, said Rin,
although the words sounded stupid as soon as she uttered them. No one could have forced Jiang into the mountain. He must have wanted to be there. But she didn't care why he had come here. She had found him. She had released him. She had his attention now.
We need your help. Please.
Jiang stepped forward out of the stone and shook his limbs as if working out the kinks. He brushed the dust meticulously off his robes. Then he uttered mildly,
You should not be here. It's not your time.
You don't understand.
And you do not listen.
He was not smiling anymore.
The seal is breaking. I can feel it. It's almost gone. If I leave this mountain, all sorts of terrible things will come into your world. So it's true,
Alton said.
You're the gatekeeper.
Jiang looked irritated.
What did I just say about not listening?
But Alton was flushed with excitement.
You are the most powerful shaman in Nikara history. You can unlock this entire mountain. You could command this army. That's your plan?
Jiang gaped at him as if in disbelief that anyone could be this stupid.
Are you mad? We...
Alton faltered, then regained his composure.
I'm not...
Jiang buried his face in his palm, like an exasperated schoolteacher.
The boy wants to set everyone in this mountain free. The boy wants to unleash the contents of the Chulukurik on the world.
It's that, or let Nikon fall,
Alten snapped.
Then let it!
What?
You don't know what the Federation is capable of, Rin said. You didn't see what they did to Golden Nice.
I saw more than you think,
said Jiang.
But this is not the way. This path leads only to darkness.
How can there be more darkness?
She screamed in frustration. Her voice echoed off the cavernous walls.
How can things possibly get worse than this? Even you took the risks. You opened the void.
That was my mistake,
Jiang said regretfully, like a child who had been chastened.
I never should have done that. I should have let them take Synagogue.
Don't you dare, Rin hissed. You opened the void. You let the beasts through. And you ran and hid here to let us deal with the consequences.
When are you going to stop hiding?
When are you going to stop being such a damn coward?
What are you running from?
Jiang looked pained.
It's easy to be brave. Harder to know when not to fight. I've learned that lesson.
Master, please.
If you unleash this on Mugen, you will ensure that this war will continue for generations, said Jiang. You will do more than burn entire provinces to the ground. You will rip apart the very fabric of the universe. These are not men entombed in this mountain. These are gods. They will treat the material world as a plaything. They will shape nature according to their will. They will level mountains and redraw rivers. They will turn the mortal world into the same chaotic flow of primal forces that constitutes the pantheon. But in the pantheon, the gods are balanced. Life and death, light and dark, each of the 64 entities has its opposite. Bring the gods into your world, and that balance will shatter. You will turn your world to ash, and only demons will live in the rubble.
When Jiang finished speaking, the silence rang heavily in the darkness.
I can control them, said Alten,
though even to Rin he sounded hesitant, like a boy insisting to himself that he could fly.
There are men in those bodies. The gods can't run free. I've done it with my people. Soon he should have been locked up here years ago, but I've tamed him. I can talk them back from the madness.
You are mad.
Jiang's voice was almost a whisper, containing as much awe as disbelief.
You're blinded by your own desire for vengeance. Why are you doing this?
He reached out and grasped Alton's shoulder.
For the Empire. For the love of country.
Which is it, Trangson?
What story have you told yourself?
I want to save Nikon,
Alton insisted. He repeated in a strained voice, as if trying to convince himself.
I want to save Nikon.
No, you don't, said Jiang.
You want to raise Mugen.
They're the same thing.
There is a world of difference between them. And the fact that you don't see that is why you can't do this. Your patriotism is a farce. You dress up your crusade with moral arguments, when in truth you would let millions die if it means you get your so-called justice.
That's what will happen if you open the Chulukurik, you know, said Jiang.
It won't be just Mugen that pays to sate your need for retribution, but anyone unlucky enough to be caught in this storm of insanity. Chaos does not discriminate, Trangson. And that's why this prison was designed to never be unlocked.
He sighed.
But of course, you don't care.
Alten could not have looked more shocked if Jiang had struck him across the face.
You have not cared about anything for a very long time,
Jiang continued. He regarded Alten with pity.
You are broken. You're hardly yourself anymore.
I'm trying to save my country,
Alten reiterated hollowly.
And you're a coward.
I am terrified,
Jiang acknowledged,
but only because I'm starting to remember who I once was. Don't
go down that path. Your country is ash. You can't bring it back with blood.
Alten gaped at him, unable to respond. Zhang tilted his head to the side.
Yurja knew, didn't he?
Alten blinked rapidly. He looked terrified.
What? Yurja didn't. Yurja never.
Oh, he knew.
Zhang sighed.
He must have known. Daji would have told him. Daji saw what I didn't. Daji would have made sure Yurja knew how to keep you tame.
Rin looked between them, confused. The blood had drained from Alten's face, his features twisted with rage.
How dare you? You dare allege?
It's my fault, Zhang said. I should have tried harder to help you.
Alten's voice cracked.
I didn't need to be helped.
You needed it more than anything,
Zhang said sadly.
I'm so sorry. I should have fought to save you. You were a scared little boy, and they turned you into a weapon. And now you're lost.
But not her. She can still be saved. Don't burn her with yourself.
They both looked to her then. Rin glanced between them. So this was her choice. The paths before her were clear. Alten or Zhang. Commander or master. Victory and revenge, or whatever Zhang had promised her. But what had he ever promised her? Only wisdom. Only understanding. Enlightenment. But those meant only further warnings. Petty excuses to hold her back from exercising a power that she knew she could access.
I taught you better than this.
Zhang put a hand on her shoulder. He sounded as if he were pleading.
Didn't I? Rin?
He could have helped them. He could have stopped the massacre at Golan Nis. He could have saved Na Jia. But Zhang had hidden. His country had needed him, and he had fled to ensconce himself here, without any regard for those he left behind. He had abandoned her. He hadn't even said goodbye. But Alten had not given up on her. Alten had verbally abused her and hit her, but he had faith in her power. Alten had only ever wanted to make her stronger. I'm sorry, sir, she said. But I have my orders. Zhang exhaled, and his hand fell away from her shoulder. As always under his gaze, she felt as if she were suffocating, as if he could see through to every part of her. He weighed her with those pale eyes then, and she failed him. And even though she had made her choice, she couldn't bear his disappointment. She looked away.
No, I am sorry,
Zhang said.
I'm so sorry. I tried to warn you.
He stepped backward over the ruins of his plinth. He closed his eyes. Master, please, he began to chant. At his feet, the broken stone began to move as if liquid, assuming again the form of a smooth, unbroken plinth that built slowly from the ground up. Rin ran forward.
Master!
But Zhang was still. Silent. Then the stone covered his face completely.
He's wrong.
Alten's voice trembled, whether from fear or naked rage she didn't know.
That isn't why. I'm not. We don't need him. We'll wake the others. They'll fight for me. And you. You'll fight for me, won't you? Rin?
Of course I will, she whispered. But Alten was already bashing at the next plinth with his trident, slamming the metal down over and over with naked desperation.
Wake up!
he shouted, voice cracking.
Wake up! Come on!
The shaman in the plinth had to be Phelan, the mad and murderous one. That should have posed a deterrent, but Alton certainly didn't seem to care as he slammed his trident down again into the thin stone veneer that lay over Phelan's face. The rocks came crumbling down, and the second shaman woke. Rin held her torch out hesitantly. When she saw the figure inside, she cringed in revulsion. Phelan was barely recognizable as human. Zhang had only just immured himself. His body was still passively that of a man, displaying no signs of decay. But Phelan? Phelan's body was a dead one, grayed and hardened after months of entombment without nourishment or oxygen. He had not decayed, but he had petrified. Blue veins protruded against ash-gray skin. Rin doubted any blood still flowed through those veins. Phelan's build was slender, thin and stooped, and his face looked like it might have been pleasant once. But now his skin was pulled taut over his cheekbones, eyes sunken in deep craters in his skull. And then he opened his eyes, and Rin's breath hitched in her throat. Phelan's eyes glowed brilliantly in the darkness, an unnerving blue like two fragments of the sky.
It's me, Alton said. Trengzen.
She could hear the way he fought to keep his voice level.
Do you remember me?
We remember voices,
Phelan said slowly. His voice was scratchy from months without use. It sounded like a steel blade dragged against the ancient stone of the mountain. He cocked his head at an unnatural angle, as if trying to tip maggots out of his ear.
We remember fire. And we remember you, Trengzen. We remember your hand across our mouth, and your other hand at our throat.
The way Phelan spoke made Rin clench the hilt of her sword with fear. He didn't speak like a man who had fought by Alton's side. He referred to himself as we. Alton seemed to have realized this too.
Do you remember who you are?
Phelan frowned at this as if he had forgotten. He pondered a long time before he rasped out.
We are a spirit of the wind. We may take the body of a dragon or the body of a man. We rule the skies of this world. We carry the four winds in a bag and we fly as our whims take us.
You're Phelan of the Psyche. You serve the Empress, and you served under Tyr's command. I need your help,
Alton said.
I need you to fight for me again.
To fight?
There's a war,
Alton said,
and we need the power of the gods.
The power of the gods,
Phelan drawled slowly. Then he laughed. It wasn't a human laugh. It was a high-pitched echo that sounded off the mountain walls like the shrieking of bats.
We fought for you the first time,
he said.
We fought for the Empire, for your thrice-damned Empress. What did that get us? A slap on the back, and a trip to this mountain.
You did try to send the Night Castle tumbling down a cliff,
Alton pointed out.
We were confused. We didn't know where we were.
Phelan sounded rueful.
But no one helped us. No one calmed us. No. Instead, you helped put us in here. When Tyr subdued us, you held the rope. You dragged us here like cattle. And he stood there and watched the stone close across our face.
That wasn't my decision,
Alton said.
Tyr thought. Tyr got scared. The man asked for our power, and backed off when it became too much.
Alton swallowed.
I didn't want this for you.
You promised us you wouldn't hurt us. I thought you cared about us. We were scared. We were vulnerable. And you bound us in the night. You subdued us with your flames. Can you imagine the pain? The terror? All we ever did was fight for you. And you repaid us with eternal torture.
We put you to sleep, Alton said. We gave you rest.
Rest? Do you think this is rest?
Phelan hissed.
Do you have any idea what this mountain is like? Try stepping into that stone. See if you can last even an hour. Gods were not meant to be contained, least of all us. We are the wind. We blow in each and every direction. We obey no master. Do you know what torment this is? Do you know what the boredom is like?
He stepped forward and opened his hands out toward Alton. Rin tensed, but nothing happened. Perhaps the god Phelan had summoned was capable of immense power. Perhaps he could have leveled villages, might have ripped Alton apart under normal circumstances. But they were inside the mountain. Whatever Phelan was capable of, whatever he would have done, the gods had no power here.
I know how terrible it must be to be cut off from the Pantheon, said Alton. But if you fight for me, if you promise to contain yourself, then you never have to suffer that again.
We have become divine, said Phelan. Do you think we care what happens to mortals?
I don't need you to care about mortals, said Alton. I need you to remember me. I need the power of your god, but I need more the man inside. I need the person in control. I know you're in there, Phelan.
In control. You speak to us of control.
Phelan gnashed his teeth when he spoke, like every word was a curse.
We cannot be controlled like pack animals for your use. You're in over your head, little Spearly. You've brought down forces you don't understand into your pathetic little material world. And your world would be infinitely more interesting if someone smashed it up for a bit.
The color drained from Alton's face.
Rin, get back,
he said quietly. Zhang was right. Chagan had been right. An entire army of these creatures would have spelled the end of the world. She had never felt so wrong. We can't let this thing leave the mountain. The same thought seemed to strike Phelan at precisely that moment. He looked between them and the stream of light 2 tiers up, through which they could just hear the wind howling outside, and he smiled crookedly.
Ah, he said. Left it wide open, haven't you?
His luminous eyes came alive with malicious glee, and he regarded the exit with the yearning of a drowning man desperate to come up for air.
Phelan, please.
Alton stretched out a hand, and his voice was quiet when he spoke to Phelan, as if he thought he could calm him the way he had calmed Suni.
You cannot threaten us. We can rip you apart,
sneered Phelan.
I know you can, said Alton. But I trust that you won't. I'm trusting the person inside.
You are a fool to think me human.
Me,
said Alton.
You said me.
Phelan's face spasmed. The blue light dimmed from his eyes. His features morphed just so slightly. The sneer disappeared, and his mouth worked as if trying to decide what commands to obey. Alton lifted his trident out to the side, far away from Phelan. Then, with a slow deliberateness, he flung the weapon away from him. It clattered against the wall, echoed in the silence of the mountain. Phelan stared at the weapon in wide-eyed disbelief.
"I'm trusting you with my life," said Alton. "I know you're in there, Phelan."
Slowly, he stretched his hand out again. And Phelan grasped it. The contact sent tremors through Phelan's body. When he looked up, he had that same terrified expression she'd seen in Suni. His eyes were wide, dark and imploring, like a child seeking a protector. A lost soul desperately seeking an anchor back to the mortal world.
"Alton,"
he whispered.
"I'm here."
Alton walked forward. As before, he approached the god without fear, despite full knowledge of what it could do to him.
"I can't die,"
Phelan whispered. His voice contained none of that grating quality now. It was tremulous, so vulnerable there was no doubt that this Phelan was human.
"It's awful, Trengzin. Why can't I die? I should never have summoned that god. Our minds are meant to be our own, not shared with these things. I do not live here in this mountain. But I can't die."
Rin felt sick. Jiang was right. The gods had no place in their world. No wonder the Spearleys had driven themselves mad. No wonder Jiang was so terrified of pulling the gods down into the mortal realm. The Pantheon was where they belonged. The Pantheon was where they should stay. This was a power mankind never should have meddled with. What were they thinking? They should leave. Now. While Phelan was still under control, they should pull the stone door closed so that he could never escape. But Alton showed none of her fear. Alton had his soldier back.
"I can't let you die yet,"
Alton said.
"I need you to fight for me. Can you do that?"
Phelan had not let go of Alton's arm. He drew him closer, as if into an embrace. He leaned in and brushed his lips against Alton's ear, and whispered so that Rin could barely hear what he said.
"Kill yourself, Trengzin. Die while you still can."
His eyes met Rin's over Alton's shoulder. They glinted a bright blue.
"Alton!"
Rin screamed, and Phelan wrenched his commander across the plinth and flung him toward the abyss. It was not a strong throw. Phelan's muscles were atrophied from months of disuse. He moved clumsily, like a newborn fawn, a god tottering about in a mortal body. But Alton careened wildly over the side, flailing in the air for balance, and Phelan pushed past him and scrambled up the stone steps toward the exit. His face was wild with a gleeful malice. Ecstatic. Rin threw herself across the stone. She landed stomach first on the floor, arms extended, and the next thing she felt was terrible pain as Alton's fingers closed around her wrist just before he plunged into the darkness. His weight wrenched her arm down. She cried out in agony as her elbow slammed against stone. But then Alton's other arm shot up from the darkness. She strained down. Their fingers clasped together. Rocks clattered off the edge of the precipice, falling away into the abyss, but Alton hung steady by both of her arms. They slid forward, and for one sick moment she feared his weight might pull the both of them over the edge, but then her foot caught in a groove and they came to a stop.
"I've got you," she panted.
"Let go,"
Alton said.
What?
I'm going to swing myself up, he said. Let my left arm go.
She obeyed. Alton kicked himself to the side to generate momentum, and then threw his other hand up to grasp the edge. She lay straining against the floor, legs digging into the stone to keep herself from sliding forward, while he pulled himself over the edge of the precipice. He slammed one arm over the top and dug his elbow into the floor. Grunting, he hauled his legs over the edge in a single fluid movement. Sobbing with relief, Rin helped him to his feet, but he brushed her off.
"Phelan," he hissed, and set out at an uneven sprint up the stone pathway.
Rin followed him, but it was pointless. When they ran, the only footsteps they could hear were their own, because Phelan had long disappeared out the mouth of the Chulu Kurik. They'd given him free rein in the world. But Alton had overpowered him once. Surely they could do so again. They had to. They stumbled out the stone door and skidded to a halt before a wall of steel. Federation soldiers thronged the mountainside. Their general barked a command, and the soldiers pressed forward with their shields linked to create a barrier, backing Rin and Alton inside the stone mountain. She caught Alton's stricken expression for a brief moment before he was buried beneath a crowd of armor and swords. She had no time to wonder why the Federation soldiers were there, or how they had known to arrive. All questions disappeared from her mind with the immediacy of combat. The fighting instinct took over. The world became a matter of blades and parries, just another melee. Yet even as she drew her sword, she knew it was hopeless. The Federation had chosen precisely the right place to kill Aspirely. Alton and Rin had no advantage in here. The Phoenix could not reach them through the thick walls of stone. Swallowing the poppy would be useless. They might pray to their god, but no one would answer. A pair of gauntleted arms reached around Rin from behind, pinning her arms to her sides. From the corner of her eye she saw Alton backed against the wall, no fewer than 5 blades at his neck. He might have been the best martial artist in Nikon, but without his fire, without his trident, he was still only one man. Rin jammed her elbow into her captor's stomach, wriggled free, and whipped her sword outward at the nearest soldier. Their blades clashed. She landed a lucky, wild swing. He tumbled, yelling, into the abyss with her sword embedded in his knee. Rin made a grab for her weapon, but it was too late. The next soldier swung wide overhead. She ducked into close quarters, reaching for the knife in her belt. The soldier cracked the hilt of his blade down on her shoulder and sent her sprawling across the floor. She fumbled blindly against the rock. Then someone slammed a shield against the back of her head. Chapter 24. She woke in darkness. She was lying on a flat, swaying surface. A wagon? A ship? Though she was certain her eyes were open, she could see nothing. Had she been sealed inside something? Or was it simply nighttime? She had no idea how much time had passed. She tried to move and discovered that she was bound. Hands tied tightly behind her back. Legs strapped together. She tried to sit up, and the muscles around her left shoulder screamed in pain. She choked back a whimper and lay down until the throbbing subsided. Then she tried moving horizontally instead. Her legs were stiff. The one she lay on was numb from lack of blood flow, and when she shifted so that it would regain feeling, it hurt like a 1,000 needles were being slowly inserted into her foot. She could not move her legs separately, so she writhed back and forth like a worm, inching about until her feet kicked against the sides of something. She pushed against it and writhed the other way. She was sure now that she was in a wagon. With great effort, she pulled herself to a sitting position. The top of her head bumped against something scratchy. A canvas sheet. Or a tarp. Now that her eyes had adjusted, she could see that it was not dark outside after all. The wagon cover simply blocked out the sunlight. She strained against the tarp until a crack of light flooded in through the side. Trembling with effort, she pressed her eye to the slit. It took her a while to comprehend what she saw. The road looked like something out of a dream. It was as if a great gust of wind had blown through a small city, turning households inside out, distributing the contents at random on the grass by the trail. A pair of ornate wooden chairs lay tipped over next to a set of woolen stockings. A dining table sat beside a carved chess set, jade pieces scattered across the dirt. Paintings, toys, entire trunks of clothing lay open by the roadside. She saw a wedding dress, a matching set of silken sleepwear. It was a trail of fleeing villagers. Whatever Nikata had lived in this area, they had long gone, and they had flung things by the roadside as they became too heavy to carry. As desperation for survival outweighed their attachment to their possessions, the Nikata had dropped off their belongings one by one. Was this Phelan's doing? Or the Federation's? Rin's stomach curdled at the idea that she might be responsible for this. But if the Wind God had indeed caused this destruction, then he had long moved on. The air was calm when they rode, and no freak winds or tornadoes materialized to rip them to pieces. Perhaps he was wreaking havoc on the world elsewhere. Perhaps he had fled north to bide his time, to heal and adjust to his long-awaited freedom. Who could predict the will of a god? Had the Federation raised Takani to the ground yet? Had the Fongs heard rumors of the advancing army early enough to run before the Federation tore their village apart? What about Kisagi? She thought the Federation soldiers might loot the debris, but they were moving so fast that the officers yelled at their troops when they stopped to pick things up. Wherever they were going, they wanted to get there soon. Among the abandoned chests and furniture, Rin saw a man sitting by the road. He slouched beside a bamboo carrying pole, the kind farmers used to balance buckets of water for irrigation. He had fashioned a large sign out of the back of a painting, on which he'd scrawled in messy calligraphy, 5 ingots.
2 girls, he said in a slow chant. 2 girls. Healthy girls. For sale.
2 toddlers peered out over the tops of the wooden buckets. They stared wonderingly at the passing soldiers. One noticed Rin peeking out from under the tarp, and she blinked her luminous eyes in uncomprehending curiosity. She lifted her tiny fingers and waved at them, just as a soldier shouted out in excitement. Rin shrank back into the wagon. Tears leaked out the sides of her eyes. She couldn't breathe. She squeezed her eyes shut. She did not want to see what became of those girls.
Rin.
For the first time, she noticed that Alton was curled up in the other corner of the wagon. She could barely see him under the darkness of the tarp. She inched clumsily toward him like a caterpillar.
"Where are we?"
he asked. "I can't tell," she said. "But we're nowhere near the Kukkonen range. We're traveling over flat roads."
"We're in a wagon."
"I think so. I don't know how many of them there are."
"It doesn't matter. I'll get us out. I'm going to burn through these ropes," he announced. "Get back."
She wriggled to the other side of the wagon just as Alton ignited a small flame from his arms. His bonds caught fire at the edges, began slowly to blacken. Smoke filled the wagon. Rin's eyes teared up. She could not stop herself from coughing. Minutes passed.
"Just a bit longer," Alton said.
The smoke curled off the rope in thick tendrils. Rin glanced about the tarp, panicked. If the smoke didn't escape out the sides, they might suffocate before Alton broke through his bonds. But if it did... She heard shouting above her. The language was Mugini, but the commands were too terse and abrupt for her to translate. Someone yanked the tarp off. Alton's flings exploded into full force, just as a soldier drenched him with an entire bucket full of water. A great sizzling noise filled the air. Alton screamed. Someone clamped a damp cloth over Rin's mouth. She kicked and struggled, holding her breath, but they jabbed something sharp into her bruised shoulder and she could not help inhaling sharply in pain. Then her nostrils filled with the sweet smell of gas. Lights. Lights so bright they hurt like knives jabbing into her eyes. Rin tried to squirm away from the source, but nothing happened. For a moment she thrashed in vain, terrified that she'd been paralyzed, until she realized she was tied down with restraints, strapped to some flat bed. Rin's peripheral vision was limited to the top half of the room. If she strained, she could just see Alton's head adjacent to hers. Rin's eyes darted around in terror. Shelves filled the sides of the room. They brimmed with jars that contained feet, heads, organs, and fingers, all meticulously labeled. A massive glass chamber stood in the corner. Inside was the body of an adult man. Rin stared at him for a minute before she realized the man was long dead. It was only a corpse that was being preserved in chemicals, like pickled vegetables. His eyes were still frozen in an expression of horror, mouth wide in an underwater scream. The label at the top of the jar read in fine, neat handwriting, Nikata Man, 32. The jars on the shelves were labeled similarly. Liver, Nikata Child, 12. Lungs, Nikata Woman, 51. She wondered dully if that was how she would end up, neatly parceled in this operating room. Nikata Woman, 19.
I'm back.
Alton had awoken beside her. His voice was a dry whisper.
I never thought I'd be back.
Rin's insides twisted with dread. Where are we?
Please, Alton said. Don't make me explain this to you.
She knew then exactly where they were. Chagan's words echoed in her mind.
After the First Poppy War, the Federation became obsessed with your people. They spent the decades in between the Poppy Wars kidnapping Spearleys, experimenting on them, trying to figure out what made them special.
The Federation soldiers had brought them to that same research facility that Alton had been abducted to as a child. The place that had left him with a crippling addiction to opium. The place that had been liberated by the Hesperians. The place that should have been destroyed after the Second Poppy War. Snake Province must have fallen, she realized with a sinking feeling. The Federation had occupied more ground than she'd feared. The Hesperians were long gone. The Federation was back. The monsters had returned to their lair.
You know the worst part,
Alton said.
We're so close to home. To Spear. We're on the coastline. We're right by the sea. When they first brought us here, there weren't so many cells. They put us in a room with a window facing the water. I could see the constellations. Every night, I saw the Star of the Phoenix and thought that if I could just slip away, I could swim and keep swimming and find my way back home.
Rin thought of a 4-year-old Alton, locked in this place, staring out at the night sky while around him his friends were strapped down and dissected. She wanted to reach out and touch him, but no matter how hard she strained against those straps, she couldn't move.
Alton,
I thought someone would come and get us,
he continued, and Rin didn't think he was talking to her anymore. He spoke like he was recounting a nightmare to the empty air.
Even when they killed the others, I thought that maybe my parents would still come for me. But when the Hesperian troops liberated me, they told me I could never go back.
They told me there was nothing on the island but bones and ash.
He felt quiet. Rin was at a loss for words. She felt like she needed to say something. Something to rouse him. Turn his attention to seeking a way out of this place. But anything that came to mind was laughably inadequate. What kind of consolation could she possibly give?
Good. You're awake.
A high, tremulous voice interrupted her thoughts. Whoever it was spoke from directly behind her, out of her line of sight. Rin's eyes bulged and she strained against the straps.
Oh, I'm sorry, but of course you cannot see me.
The owner of the voice moved to stand directly above her. He was a very thin, white-haired man in a doctor's uniform. His beard was trimmed meticulously to a sharp point, ending 2 inches below his chin. His dark eyes glittered with a bright intelligence.
Is this better?
He smiled benignly, as if greeting an old friend.
I am Eimichi Shiro, chief medical officer of this camp. You may call me Dr. Shiro.
He spoke Nikara, not Mogini. He had a very prim Synegardian accent, as if he'd learned the language 50 years ago. His tone was stilted, artificially cheerful. When Rin did not respond, the doctor shrugged and turned to the other table.
Oh, Alton, he said. I had no idea you'd be coming back. This is a wonderful surprise. I couldn't believe it when they told me. They said, Dr. Shiro, we found a Spearly. And I said, you've got to be joking. There are no more Spearlies.
Shiro chuckled mildly. Rin strained to see Alton's face. He was awake. His eyes were open. But he glared at the ceiling without looking at Shiro.
They have been so scared of you, you know.
Shiro continued cheerfully.
What do they call you? The monster of Nikon? The phoenix incarnate? My countrymen love exaggerations, and they love you Nikara shamans even more. You are a myth, a legend. You are so special. Why do you act so sullen?
Alton said nothing. Shiro seemed to deflate slightly, but then he grinned and patted Alton on the cheek.
Of course, you must be tired. Do not worry. We will fix you up in just a moment. I have just the thing.
He hummed happily as he bustled over to the corner of the operating room. He perused his shelves, plucking out various vials and instruments. Rin heard a popping noise, and then the sound of a candle being lit. She could not see what Shiro was doing with his hands until he returned to stand above Alton.
Did you miss me?
He inquired. Alton said nothing. Shiro lifted a syringe over Alton's face, tapping the glass so that both of them could see the liquid inside.
Did you miss this?
Alton's eyes bulged. Shiro held Alton's wrist down with a gentle touch, almost as a mother would caress her child. His skilled fingers prodded for a vein. With his other hand, he brought the needle to Alton's arm and pushed. Only then did Alton scream.
Stop!
Rin shrieked. Spittle flew out the sides of her mouth.
Stop it! My dear!
Shiro set the empty syringe down and rushed to her side.
Come! Calm down! He will be fine! You're killing him!
She thrashed wildly against her bonds, but they held firm. Tears leaked from her eyes. Shiro wiped them meticulously away, keeping his fingers out of reach of her gnashing teeth.
Killing? Don't be dramatic. I just gave him some of his favorite medicine.
Shiro tapped his temple and winked at her.
You know he enjoys it. You traveled with him, didn't you? This drug is not anything new to him. He will be fine in a few minutes.
They both looked to Alton. Alton's breathing had stabilized, but he certainly did not look fine.
"Why are you doing this?"
Rin choked. She'd thought she understood Federation cruelty by now. She had seen Golan Nice. She'd seen the evidence of Mugani's scientists' handiwork. But to look this evil in the eye, to watch Shiro inflict such pain on Alton and smile about it, Rin could not comprehend it.
"What do you want from us?"
Shiro sighed.
"Is it not obvious?"
He patted her cheek.
"I want knowledge. Our work here will advance medical technology by decades. When else do you get such a good chance to do research? An endless supply of cadavers. Boundless opportunities for experimentation. I can answer every question I've ever had about the human body. I can devise ways to prevent death."
Rin gaped at him in disbelief.
"You are cutting my people open."
"Your people?"
Shiro snorted.
"Don't degrade yourself. You're nothing like those pathetic Nikara. You Spearlies are so fascinating, composed of such lovely material."
Shiro fondly brushed the hair from Alton's sweaty forehead.
"Such beautiful skin. Such fascinating eyes. The Empress doesn't know what she has."
He pressed two fingers against Rin's neck to take her pulse. She swallowed down the bile that rose up in his touch.
"I wonder if you might oblige me," he said gently. "Show me the fire. I know you can."
"What?"
"You Spearlies are so special,"
Shiro confided. His voice had taken on a low, husky tone. He spoke as if to an infant, or a lover.
"So strong, so unique. They say you are God's chosen people. What makes you this way?"
Hatred, Rin thought. Hatred, and a history of suffering inflicted by people like you.
"You know my country has never achieved feats of shamanism,"
Shiro said.
"Do you have any idea why?"
"Because the gods wouldn't bother with scum like you," Rin spat. Shiro brushed at the air, as if swatting the insult away. He must have heard so many Nikara curses by now that they meant nothing to him.
"We will do it like this," he said. "I will request you to show me the way to the gods. Each time you refuse, I will give him another injection of the drug. You know how he will feel it."
Alton made a low, guttural noise from his bed. His entire body tensed and spasmed. Shiro murmured something into his ear and stroked Alton's forehead, as tenderly as a mother might comfort an ailing child. Hours passed. Shiro posed his questions about shamanism to Rin again and again, but she maintained a stony front. She would not reveal the secrets behind the Pantheon. She would not place yet another weapon in Mugen's hands. Instead, she cursed and spat, called him a monster, called him every vile thing she could think of. Jima hadn't taught them to curse in Mugini, but Shiro caught the gist.
"Come now," Shiro said dismissively. "It's not like you've never seen this before."
She paused, spittle dripping from her mouth. "I don't know what you mean." Shiro touched his fingers to Alton's neck to feel his pulse, pulled his eyelids back and pursed his lips as if confirming something.
"His tolerance is astounding. Inhuman. He's been smoking opium for years."
"Because of what you did to him!"
she screeched.
"And afterward? After he was liberated?"
Shiro sounded like a disappointed teacher.
They had the last Spearly in their hands, and they never tried to wean him off the drug. It's obvious. Someone's been feeding it to him for years.